Hello and welcome to episode 5 of What's Your Point?
Welcome to What's Your Point, the podcast that gets inside the heads of business people, entrepreneurs and thought leaders in South Down. This podcast is sponsored by Navigator Financial Planning, the financial planners of choice for Northern Ireland business. Here's your host, David Crozier.
My guest today is Adrian Markey of Adrian Markey Chartered Accountants. Adrian talks about the importance of having a vision, but also about seizing the opportunity of being in the right place at the right time. He's also not too concerned that the robots are coming for his profession just yet, as he firmly believes that accountancy is, first and foremost, a people business. Okay, Adrian, listen, good to see you. And I've been trying to do this for a wee while, so it's good for you to get finally get done. So let's kick off. Tell us, what exactly is it that you do? And don't tell me accountant.
Chartered accountant then. it's morphed quite a bit in the last, I suppose, 12 years now that I've kicked off at this. So accounting traditionally was always processing historical numbers, but as the years and the technology indeed have moved on, it's changed a little bit in that I suppose I now see myself and the practice as being that business partner to our clients, the shadow finance team, the person to go to for the bit of advice before you make the decision, or the person you go to shoulder you need to cry on if you ended up making the wrong decision. So it's about more so, it's shifted a bit from reporting on historical finances to trying to project the future and advise on how to set yourself up best. I think for the most part, I'm a reverse engineer. In so much as when a client walks through the door, the first question is usually, well, what do you want out of this in 5, 10, 20 years' time? And based on what they say, the advice can be vastly different. So if a client has set up a business to grow it as fast as possible in order to sell it in 5 years, the advice is going to be vastly different than someone that, you know, wants to set up a legacy business that's there to pass on to the children. You know, it's structured in a different way. It's operating in a different way. The level of aggression, I suppose, in the business changes a bit depending on what they want to achieve. So it's all about what I first try to do is find the end goal and work back, I suppose, for businesses and clients.
That's interesting. So traditionally, accountants are seen, and you know, don't take offence at this, as the undertakers, the people that count the bodies in the battlefield after the smoke is cleared. And yeah, I'm sure you'd agree to an extent that is true. But I guess what you're doing, or you're positioning yourself as we do ourselves, is like, can we try and help you with some of the generalship here and direct strategy and tactics rather than just clearing up afterwards? Is that how you see it?
Exactly, yes. And look, there's definitely value in counting the bodies in the battlefield afterwards, because, you know, I think a lot of businesses do drift through day to day, and without taking that retrospective look at things, there's no idea how they did. And some people are surprised, you know, when you do report in the historicals and say, look, you lost 50 grand last year, and they're going, yeah, but I didn't feel it. And then when you can point out and explain where it happened, then that's the catalyst to change that behavior. But yeah, very much so. I mean, you'll agree as well. I think business has changed vastly in the last 10 years, the last 20 years. It's unrecognizable to an extent, and technology has certainly driven that forward. So yeah, it is very much about advising on how to adapt a business for that longevity, if longevity is what they're after, or just to adapt. Look, now is the perfect example. We have a global pandemic happening, and businesses have shut their doors, and people's income has stopped overnight. So it's about what you can do now to strategically place yourself in a position to succeed when the business does reopen, or to continue to succeed while the business is closed, which is trickier, but is still doable. So it's that, it's different from client to client. Some want you to hold their hand throughout things, and some just want you to point them in the direction and they'll get there themselves. So our level of involvement is very much dependent on what the client wants as well, you know.
You said an interesting thing there, you said about using the numbers, using the facts to change behaviours. And I think that's an interesting one, because very often businesses, they'll just look at their cash and that's what they'll see and they'll go from there. But what they're not taking account of is maybe their debtors or their creditors. in that, and their stock doing something different, and their work in progress and all that. So I guess this comes back to what another of your peers on a previous podcast said, Philip, and he talked about treating the business like a business. How good do you think people are at treating a business like a business, and then looking at what you give them in terms of a P&L or a balance sheet and saying, right, guys, here's the facts. Now you need to change your behavior. How good are people at doing that?
It's very, very varied. There are people that, and look, this happens as well. Sometimes you take on a client that has been in business for 10 years already, and the bad habits are ground in, and trying to change those, whilst we can advise on it, we can't force it. And sometimes it does just take constantly tapping at that nail to try and get it in. But I think from my own perspective, generally, the advice is usually taken on board, depending on how much you kind of communicate the gravity of the situation. And sometimes if it's got to that stage, people know. Other people kind of, depending on the relationship again, you know, you have that once a year meeting with some clients, other clients, you meet them every 2 weeks. So if you're only seeing them once a year, it's very easy for them to pander to you in the meeting sometimes and say, yeah, look, we're going to have a look at this and do this, that, and the other. But then if you don't hear from them for 6 months, they might have just fallen into the old habits again. So it's very varied, but part of it comes down to how the message is communicated as well. You know, if you just tell someone, here, your margins are up the left, they go, right, okay. But if you sort of tell them, here's the products on which your margins are up the left, okay, you need to look at replacing them and changing them. So the specificity of the information can help, and the way that the message is delivered. But ultimately, you're dealing with very human beings, and how they act on that then is going to be different from person to person, you know?
Yeah, and again, that's another thing that Philip said, that accountancy is as much a people business as it is a number business, and you're saying pretty much the same thing there.
It's more a people business than it is a numbers business. You know, this is, I do talks in schools every so often with Chartered Accountants Ireland, and the big myth that Chartered Accountants Ireland are actually trying to dispel is that you need to be a maths genius to be an accountant. You know, the fact of it is, look, yes, it's useful, but the computer does the numbers for you. The brain that the accountant needs to have, I think, is the strategic one and an empathetic ear as much as anything.
That's very interesting, because we're doing exactly the same thing and having exactly the same outcome going into schools. And I need to be good at maths, so I'm not going to be any use at this. Nonsense. You need to be able to communicate. You need to be able to change behaviours. You need to, you know, influence and direct. There's a couple of strings that you have to your bows that I wanted to ask you. Your bow that I wanted to ask you about, and one was crypto, because that's something you've been involved in, and you do talk about it, and you're quite enthusiastic about it. So tell me a bit about that.
Probably the biggest fluke of my career, to an extent. It was, I suppose, cryptocurrency was something that I watched from afar for a few years and had an interest in, but it was kind of in that it was nowhere near a mainstream thing at the time. It was only towards the tail end of 2017 and the start of 2018 where Bitcoin prices started to go through the roof, you know, up to, I think, £14,000 sterling for one Bitcoin at one stage, which is still the all-time high for Bitcoin. So that kind of caught my interest, and with the accountant's head on, then wondered what's the tax implications of this. So started to dig into it a little bit. HMRC were very much behind the curve on it. They had published a paper in 2014. Yeah, I know. They had published a brief in 2014, which was exactly that. It was brief. It was non-committal. It didn't offer anyone any sort of certainty around how this was going to be taxed. The message generally was like, yeah, we're going to tax this, probably under capital gains tax, but it was by no means a policy document. So took it upon myself, I suppose, to keep digging and looking and seeing what the likely outcome was going to be, and I suppose put my thoughts together on it in a blog post, circulated the blog post to a couple of websites involved in cryptocurrency, one that was specifically trying to do something similar, which was put together what the tax implications of this were going to be. They picked it up, shared it with their user base, and then after that the phone started ringing very, very consistently, because a lot of people had made a lot of money at that point, so tax was obviously a consideration or a fear at that point. So that's where I kind of got involved in it in a much bigger way then, because all of a sudden there were 50, 60, 70 new clients with this very niche type of income that only one or two other people in the UK were actually looking at. If you like, one or two other accountants in the UK were actually looking at. So, and for me, it in a selfish way, if you like, what it allowed me to do was actually move entirely to becoming a practice accountant. Because prior to that, I was management accountant in a few different businesses throughout the 3 years before 2016. So that kind of was the catalyst for me. But as much as it's great to see people, you know, making money out of technology, which is how I sort of view it, it's more of a, yes, it's an investment, but it was kind of one that the geeks got in on before anybody else. But to me, the thing that piqued my interest and in my eyes in the long run is going to be the more interesting side is the underlying technology of blockchain and what it can do. We kind of had that .com bubble with cryptocurrency in that respect, or with blockchain in that respect, in that everybody was coming up with a solution for a problem that didn't exist. You know, they're creating a cryptocurrency or a utility token, and they all kind of fell by the wayside. That the market kind of decided these aren't really of any real world use, and they fell out of the way. And I think what it did then for investment in blockchain is it made people a bit sharper and a bit smarter in that if you're going to come up with a product, it has to do something. It has to be useful, you know. And there's a lot of companies out there that have already started putting blockchain to use, and it's really only going to continue to grow, I think.
I think that's interesting because, I mean, you and I have talked about this before, and I never was a fan of Bitcoin or indeed any other cryptos for the very reason you've said, that, you know, there is no intrinsic, there's nothing there, it doesn't do anything. But likewise, I do think there's got to be some use for that technology. To go back to kind of the point of the podcast, which is to get some learnings out of this, looking at what you've done there is you've seen something, you've taken an interest and you've got involved. What would you say your learnings out of that are, you know, in general, in life, in business, from going through that process of what you've done?
Serendipity is certainly one. You know, for me, that was very much a case of right place at the right time, and saying all the right things. But as much as that, it was a marketing strategy of mine from the start, that not to focus on cryptocurrency, but my marketing tactic, if you like, if you want to call it a tactic, was always, I mean, as an advisor to a business, what you have to try and achieve in the first instance is trust. And the way that I saw to do that is to put information out there that I know, and try to convince people, if you like, that I know what I'm talking about. And that can be difficult. And I think, to comment on accountants in general, they're getting better at it. But historically, accountants were always very, very precious of the information that they had. They didn't want to put up a blog post explaining, you know, what boxes to fill in your tax return, because the fear was, you're going to go and do this yourself and I'm not going to get paid. But the fact is, you know, people do appreciate advice from people that know what they're talking about, and they're willing to pay for it. The hurdle is trust. The hurdle is, I could go to this guy, he could fill out a tax return completely wrong, and I wouldn't be any the wiser until something bad happens, and I'm going to hand over my money. They want that comfort from people like you or me or solicitors or anyone like that. And where traditionally the referral was always the go-to tool for trust, they now have a lot more tools at their disposal. They can literally just go onto a Facebook page, see what you're talking about, and if it makes sense to them, they go, yep, he knows his stuff, I'm going to give him a call.
Yeah, so in summary, it seems to me what you did there was that you saw a niche, yep, okay, a bit of good luck, bit of serendipity involved, but I think who was it? Was it Lee Trevino? Said, the harder I work, the luckier I get. Somebody like that.
Yeah.
What you did was you then took a niche and made yourself. You went very, very deep into that and made yourself an expert to generate a brand through trust. And I think that is a very, very powerful way to go about it. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, for any business out there, it is, like you say, it's, and you use both phrases in that quote, it's hard work and a bit of luck. Mm-hmm. There's no substitute, and not forgetting actually being good at what you do.
Yeah,
you know, you can work very, very hard at something and have a little bit of luck along the way, but sooner or later, if you're not as much of a rock star as you're portraying yourself to be, it catches up with you.
Yeah, the phrase that we use here is really, really easy to make money. This, when the tide's coming in, all the boats go up.
Yeah.
Goes back out again, you see who's swimming without your shorts.
Exactly, exactly.
So do you want to just give us a little bit of your journey, Adrian? So your own personal journey into where you got to and setting up your own practice?
Yeah, so, I mean, I remember when I was probably, I must have been 17, walking into the assembly hall in the Abbey, and there was a careers fair on. And I remember looking around the room, and there were some local solicitors up in one corner. I thought I must go have a chat with them. I think there were engineers there as well. I thought I'd maybe talk to them. Didn't know what I wanted to do. But what the one thing I knew for certain at that time is that I wasn't going anywhere near the accountants, because that must be the most boring job in the world that I will never have any interest in, so I'll be wasting my time. I remember actually saying those words out loud. So I suppose after leaving school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I did about 6 months of a sociology degree in Jordanstown, left that, and then I didn't really know where I wanted to go. I floated for a bit. I mean, for a couple of years, I was a full-time musician. I gigged around Warren Point, Newry, Belfast, Dublin, different places, and didn't really know what I wanted to do. And it was the catalyst, I suppose, for it was 2007, 2008, when things started to bite a little bit. I noticed the pubs around Warren Point were getting a lot quieter. So places where we would have maybe been in gigging and kicking off at 9 o'clock. After a few weeks, we were there at 11 and there were three people there, and we were going, will we even bother, you know? At the time, I was going out with a girl who had just started into accountancy, and I basically asked her, what do you think of it? Mm. And she said, I like it. So I said, well, I'll give that a go. And now we're both chartered accountants and we're married. So that was the catalyst. She deserves the credit for pointing me in the direction of this, I suppose. From there then, it was I trained in practice for 6 years, left then, and I think in the back of my head I always wanted to start a practice, and was maybe making an attempt for some reason to talk myself out of it. Didn't know if I wanted to do that. If you know, I think there was always the talk that there was more money in accountancy if you were in industry than in practice. So I didn't know if I'd like industry, so I took a maternity cover for a linen company out in Banbridge, just holding the fort for the accountant while she was on maternity leave, and quite liked that, and then moved on to another job that I didn't like at all, and left that after maybe 18 months, and another industry stint quite local here. At that point, when I took the job locally, I think I did know that I wanted to go for the practice full time. You know, I'd picked up a few clients at that stage. It was growing a bit. I was better at it. I enjoyed the variety of practice a lot more, dealing with, you know, a multitude of different clients, different sectors, rather than in-house in a business where you know on the 27th of every month you're doing payroll, and you know you can kind of map out your whole working week for the next 6 months, I think, in industry sometimes. So it was, to an extent, it was maybe a strategic decision to take that local job, because it was 5 minutes from the house. I wasn't losing time commuting, so that when I went home, I was home at 5 minutes past 5, got the dinner, and then could go to work on the client work.
Right.
That job then, there was an opportunity in that business came up that rather than being the in-house accountant, they were looking for almost like a project manager, but it was a lot of tech stuff, which is right up my street. That, you know, they needed to put a new server in for the business. They wanted a website. They wanted to start getting into social media and things like that. So I actually took that position, and somebody else came in and filled the accountant's position in that business. And it actually worked out quite well, because then just as all the projects were winding up, I had enough on my plate with the cryptocurrency and with all the other clients to be able to move to the practice full time. That was in 2018. And then 2019, almost exactly a year ago, moved into the premises on Main Street in Warren Point. And we're now up to one other member of staff, and it's just been growing since.
I remember very well you moved in opposite us, and you know, it's great to see that happening. So, question for you: you said that the branding marketing piece around cryptocurrency was the catalyst. Do you think if you hadn't done that, you would not have set up a private practice on your own, or do you think you were always going to do that?
No,
not to a certain point.
No, it was always going that way.
Right.
I mean, at that stage, it was very clear in my mind that that's where I wanted to get to. It was just a case of how and when. But yeah, all it did was it accelerated the journey. And it was, again, back to a bit of serendipity, you know, just as things were winding up in the other job, I had enough, you know, so it worked quite well. It was a very nice, slow, phased move out of the industry side of things. And then the practice kind of picked up the slack then. So it, again, luck, or maybe it was just how it worked out. But yeah, it worked out for the best. But yeah, to answer the question, it was always going that way. I do like to know, or at least have an idea of where I'm going in the next few years. So by 2017, my mind, I think it had already been made up before I even started looking into cryptocurrency, that I want to build a practice.
Right. So you have opened a nice office on Church Street in Warren Point, and you know, it's a nice office. I've been in it a couple of times. And so, but why Warren Point?
Look, born and bred, I suppose. Yeah. It's one of those. I think, like, when I was younger, I wasn't all that fond of Warren Point. You know, I didn't really hang out here much. I preferred my dad grew up in White Cross, and I used to spend all my summers I'd stand there with my granny and that, you know. So I had a lot of friends out there, and I kind of enjoyed the countryside a bit. It's only really, I think, as I got older that I've come to appreciate it more. I mean, that view, even, you know, yeah, that I would have seen a million times when I was younger, it's only when you get a little bit older, you kind of appreciate it, and it strikes you that bit more. Yeah, look, I mean, it's one of those towns that I think I really fell in love with it through the music, because when I was doing the music, Warren Point was just such a thriving place. There's live music in 12 or 13 bars, you know, every Friday, Saturday night. 2008 kind of put an end to a lot of that, and I don't think it's ever fully recovered from that, but it's still just this little sort of jewel of a town on the coast, you know. For business reasons, I suppose, look, I could have looked at Newry, and I did look at Newry actually for premises, but then this premises came up, and I always actually remember the place that I'm in now is the Butchers,
when
I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, and Ennie and Lawless was here for quite a few years as well. It's just, I suppose it's an affinity with the town, you know, from having lived here pretty much all my life. And look, the rent and the rates is a little bit cheaper than Newry as well. Plus, I kind of like, maybe it was a little bit naive in thinking this, I kind of thought having a shop front wouldn't make any difference to me. You know, it won't matter, because I think in my head I maybe overvalued online marketing. But it's actually, it's if nothing else, it's a great advert that you're on the main street in Warren Point, where you have thousands of cars passing on every day. Big logo in the window, and if nothing else, you're just putting yourself in people's minds, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to beat the 5 minute commute and the ability to walk around the front door at lunchtime as well. So somebody made a remark to me this morning that if you compare Warren Point, and I mean right at this precise moment of time over the last few weeks, if you compare Warren Point with, for example, Newry or Belfast, Warren Point's quiet, but it's not dead. Newry. Yeah. Dead, Belfast dead. Do you think that Warren Point people are, you know, local people are supporting local businesses rather than going to Newry in a way that perhaps they weren't 6 weeks, 2 months ago?
Yeah. In terms of retail, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I you know, people aren't going to come to me just because I'm local. Again, that goes back to the trust thing. Yeah. But yeah, there is that overarching sense of community, certainly. And it's, to be fair, it's been driven by the businesses here as well. Because
I mean,
if you walk down the main street here now, I can just off the top of my head, I can think of 3 or 4 or 5 that have adapted and changed their model to offer delivery and online ordering and things like that to suit the local community. And they weren't doing that before. And for the most part, they haven't hiked up prices to cover delivery costs and all the rest. So the businesses, I think, have been the ones that kind of have initiated it in adapting and changing their services to help the community. And at a time when it's hard for the business, you know, yes, they kind of had to adapt to survive, but that wasn't their reason for adapting. I don't think their reason for adapting was, we're a small, close-knit community. There are probably a lot of vulnerable people in the community, or there's probably just a lot of people that are scared and not in that vulnerable category. How can we help them and make their lives a bit easier, you know?
Yeah. Which brings me to something that I know is very dear to your heart, and that is the Warren Point Bernardist Trevor Chamber. So talk to us a bit about that, because that's something that you and Mark and one or two others have put a bit of a kick in the pants into reviving in recent months.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest. I thought the Chamber of Commerce had ceased to exist up until 3 or 4 months ago. I knew it had been going a few years back, certainly when there was talk of the bridge at Narrowwater. But it had been quite quiet then, and it was kind of, I think, by accident, I think I saw a post on Facebook from the chamber one time, thought, oh, this is still going. I'd love to get involved in this. Again, come back to those same reasons of coming from the town, now being a business in the town, and wanting to get involved and help promote those local businesses. So yeah, I got in touch. They said, look, next meeting is I think it was in second week in January, and was the first one that I went to, and just took it from there. I mean, went in, listened to what people were saying, had a few things to say myself, but everyone has the same goal. And it's essentially to promote this little part of the world that we all live and do business in. I just sort of thought I could try and bring something to that. For me, it was really to solve the problem that I found. I thought it had gone out of existence, so it needed a raise in profile. So it was simply a case of me coming in and going, here, look, can we do some events? Can we do some, you know, online posts? Get go deeper on social media and just be seen to be out there, because if people don't know that you exist, they're not going to try to help you or seek help from you. So that was the main thing with it. And then there's a lot of very good people involved, and there's a lot of it. I think the chamber does a lot more than people even realize, even if it's just in terms of, if you have a question or a query and you need an answer, they know the people to get the answer from, whether it's an MLA or a councillor or an MP for the area. There's a lot of dialogue there, even with other government departments. So there is actually quite a lot of lobbying going on, and there's quite a lot achieved through that as well. So yeah, I think, look, I've sort of got the feet in under the table of it now. So we had, you'll know, because you were on the billing for this. We had an event scheduled back in March that we had to pull because of this coronavirus. But I think at the moment, when people are going through these hard times, it's good to know that the chamber is there for whatever. I mean, there's always working on in the background, just even getting answers to questions, chasing up MPs. I mean, one of the most recent things was chasing up MPs to see could anything be done about, you know, business interruption insurance policies and things like that. Yeah. But again, I suppose what I see the chamber becoming is that sort of, that go-to place for, I have a problem.
Yeah.
Whether it's to do with the bins not being lifted, or I need somebody to point me in the direction of a professional who knows this, that, or the other, who can help a little bit. And just to bring the community that bit closer together, as you said, the pandemic's kind of done a lot of the work on that for us, but it's about taking it on a bit further from there then.
Yeah, I think that's is exactly so. As you know, I've got a bit more involved in it. Like you, that thinking through it in January, and I went, oh, that's news to me. Yeah. I couldn't go to that. But, you know, Frank, our operations manager, he went to it and said, well, we need to get stuck in here. So that's great. And you know, the couple of meetings I've had, it's been a great community. And, you know, you're sharing information and you know, one or two others are sharing information about what the support that's available. It'll just be interesting to see as we come out of this whether we are then able to showcase this little jewel, as you call it, as a great place to come and do business in, because you know it's a really great place, jumping off point, you know, when we get that Southern Relief Road built, if we get the Narrow Water Bridge built, it's a great jump place off to commute to Belfast, to Dublin, to, you know, pretty much anywhere, and we've got the port. It is a great place to do business.
Yeah, and strategically as well, and to be fair, Newry has this as well. Brexit's coming. You know, it's kind of been on the back burner now because of what's going on. But to have that, you know, positioning right on the border, you know, yes, there's a lot of fear of what's going to happen with the border. But I think because so many people do work across that border, especially in this area, I'd rather be here than further from it. I think it's going to end up being an advantage more so than a disadvantage.
I agree. So give us your Tuppence Haworth on what you see the future for your profession for accountancy being, Adrian.
I think, I mean, the robots are coming, right? Mm-hmm. They're already here.
And
a lot of people see that as a huge threat to accountants, and I don't. I think it's the best thing that could have happened. And the reason being is because, I mean, historically, when you went to your accountant in years gone by, you come in with a big black bag of bank statements and invoices and unopened letters and all sorts. A lot of people maybe didn't realize that a lot of the cost in doing a set of accounts was manual entry and plugging stuff into a computer. So to my mind, what's going to happen and what's going to continue to happen is the robots are going to get smarter. It's going to be, you know, AI's starting to dig deep in accountancy. The computer is now going to become a little bit more predictive and very helpful as well. So the onus is now going to shift firmly onto the accountant to to in essence prove their worth. And going back to what I was saying at the start about the role now being more of that sort of business partner and advisory thing, that's really going to come to the fore. Because I mean, there's software out there now that you can do your bookkeeping, file your annual accounts and file your corporation tax return yourself in 5 minutes. So what do you need me for? Therefore, I now need to step up, and every accountant, I think, really needs to step up. And the value in going to an accountant is now going to be the advice, the strategic direction, and going back to the thing about trying to reverse engineer your end goals and pointing in that direction.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I guess it's not too far away from what I thought you would say. In other words, the robots and computers are going to do the boring bits you don't like doing anyway. That's an ache that has to be paid for. Let's get that done at commodity, and now let's do the bits that a computer can't yet do, the strategic thing, the forward looking,
and even just the human side of it. The person, like a lot of my job is actually just listening. Sometimes people ring you up and they don't want advice; they just want a sounding board.
Yeah,
you know, or else it's either listening to them or playing devil's advocate and picking apart the ideas that they do have and going, well, if you do that, do you realize that this is the tax consequence? Or if you don't do this, do you realize that this is going to hit your margin in this way? And it's just, sometimes it's just equipping people with the information. It's not, maybe not even advising them. It's just going, have you considered this as well?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So just one last question, and I guess it's more a philosophical and personal thing. What one thing would you want your 18-year-old self to know if a teenager ever listens to an adult?
I probably think nothing. And I don't mean that in any sort of a narcissistic or arrogant way. I just kind of think the only way for me to have got to where I am now is by taking the path that I took.
Okay.
Any deviation or alteration to that, and I wouldn't be here. And I'm happy.
Right. You
know? And there's a massive premium on happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe just would have had a word in that 17-year-old's ear when he went into the careers fair, just say, here, look, go and have a chat with the accountant. And maybe I would have got there a bit quicker. But I think for the most part, listen, business, you know, success in business isn't really a destination. It's a journey that you take, and I'm happy with mine. As we've talked about, I've had a lot of luck along the way, and maybe I wouldn't have had that luck by taking another path. So yeah, I think I maybe just a quiet word in the ear to say, look, accountants aren't all that bad. You know, it's not the stereotypical grade number crunching job that I had the impression of it being. Yes, there is a certain amount of that involved, but that's not the exciting bit, and that's not the bit that, you know, drives me. The bit that drives me ultimately is helping people. Something about helping people, and then the gratitude that you get from that, you know.
Yeah, that's terrific. I think if it would sum up what you've said there is, I think you probably would tell your teenage self, look, don't worry too much about the destination, embrace the journey and embrace the experience for itself.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I think, I think that's it summed up in a nutshell.
Thank you for joining this episode of What's Your Point? And thank you to Adrian Markey for coming onto the podcast. If you want to find out more about Adrian or any of our guests, please browse to the podcast website, navigatorfp.com/podcast. And remember to subscribe so as not to miss any episodes.
What's Your Point is sponsored by Navigator Financial Planning. You can find them at NavigatorFP.com, on Twitter at NavigatorFP, and Facebook Navigator Financial Planning. Please subscribe to get future episodes and stay up to date with what's happening in business in South Down. Enjoy the rest of your day. Navigator Financial Planning is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.